All right, we're back in session. Thank you, everybody. Let's go to Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. So that our staff can, some of our staff can move on.
The committee met at the beginning of the month, and you heard most of my report. But tonight, I would like to move the resolution that was in your packets endorsing the Cleaner, Greener, Southern Tier Regional Sustainability Plan. And I enthusiastically so move.
I'm sorry, Carol, you're saying the revised one? Yeah. Or
Which one?
The one that was in the packet?
No, actually, it's the one that was in the packet. No,
in the original packet.
The one that was in the original packet,
okay.
I believe, is sufficient.
Okay. So, moved by Carol, second by Pam.
What
it came in the mail.
And can I say a word or two?
Yes, go ahead, Carol.
Okay. So, many of you may recall that what we can do with plans and reports to us is we have three courses of action. We can accept a plan, we can endorse a plan, and we can adopt a plan, accept just as we accept it without feeling one way or the other about it. Adopting is not really appropriate in this case because it's not ours alone to adopt, and we're not commenting on taking specific actions now other than saying that this is a good plan. So we use the wording endorse as the operative word. And once again, just want to thank Ed and his staff for doing such a great job leading our multi-county region through this exercise.
All right. Any comments? Discussion? Frank.
Carol, thanks for that clarification, but I don't see in the resolve the word in... Oh, excuse me. I do see it in the first resolve. I see the word endorse. In the second resolve, it certainly says encourage collaboration between the counties and organizations in the region to implement the plan's recommendation. Doesn't that imply to you that there's an action here of implementing the recommendations, regardless of whether we said accept or endorse or whatever the third word was?
Well, cutting to the chase that you usually are concerned about, Frank, we are encouraging people to consider acting on this, but this resolution doesn't spend any money yet. If we're adopting a plan, we're agreeing to spend money on it, and right now we haven't. We're not asking to spend
so
any
what,
money.
So what's your interpretation then of implement?
We're encouraging collaboration to figure out how these kinds of ideas could be implemented.
I think in general, if we're going to endorse a plan, it's not just so it'll sit there on a shelf, but that we think it's a good idea and we should take action. But this does not authorize any particular action. Anybody else? All right, ready to vote. All in favor of Resolution B, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That is, how many are in? That is 14 to 1. 13 to 1. That passes. I'm sorry?
12 to
Frank.
1.
Frank.
Want to do it again?
Oh, Peter's not here.
Yeah, he's gone.
12 to 1. That passes. All right. That's it, Carol.
Our next committee meeting will be on July 1st at 3:30 in the afternoon. Frank?
Carol, I apologize. I should have done this under privilege of the floor, but since it falls under your committee, the Water Resources Council hosted a meeting last Wednesday night at the at Boynton with regard to the collaboration with the state DEC. We had four representatives from the DEC to begin the process of with Cornell to examine the health of the lake. It was precipitated by a concern about lake source cooling and the phosphorus loading. And there are a number of units that are that have been installed to monitor the lake, and the DEC sent four representatives down to discuss the process, and it's already begun. And I apologize, I should have done that earlier, but since it falls under your committee, I thought you'd like to know. The DEC has agreed to continue the public outreach and have other public information meetings like that one. Thanks.
Thanks, Frank. Pat?
Martha, can you just clarify for me, please? Did we change the order, or are there some committees that are... What happened to the Economic Development and Capital Plan Review and Government Operations Committees?
I thought we'd just skip them tonight. No, since Ed was sitting here, we moved to planning. And he left.
Oh.
He was waiting for that. I just want to also be clear that we passed what was mailed in the packet as passed by committee. That was the resolution.
Yeah.
So, all right, I'm going back to Economic Development Committee. Will Burbank, Chair.
Well, thank you. And thanks for noticing the absence. So we did meet on June 6th. We heard a very good presentation from Julie Maddock of the Workforce Development Board. And our quarterly report from Fred Bonn on the condition of tourism and hotels. On the report from Julia, she basically went through a PowerPoint on what they do and then the workforce goals. And I'll just read one little section, which is basically their focus, as they see it, is to increase the number of work-ready, basic skilled workers. Retrain and attack more young adults. There is a problem in this community with young people sort of, you know, we think of tons of young adults here in the colleges, but getting them to stay around and actually stay in a workforce has been a problem. Prepare for the imminent wave of baby boomers who will be retiring. That would be people like myself. And facilitate the recruitment of workers for specialized occupations. And reduce underemployment, which, of course, has been endemic for years, and increase the system's capacity to manage near-term challenges and opportunities. So that's their strategy. We also heard a presentation from Tom Knipp alerting us to a new problem. As you know, our whole tourism program is dependent on revenue that comes from a hotel tax, and that is starting to be undercut in a significant degree by people who are basically working out informal B&B arrangements through these online services that allow you to come, get a room in Ithaca, a nice room frequently, and completely skirt the system illegally because by law, those folks are supposed to be kicking into the tourism tax. And Tom has come up with, brought this to our attention and is proposing that we basically do an information effort to people, just make them aware of what the system is, how you can comply, not suggesting any aggressive enforcement, but just at this point public awareness. And so that is happening. The final thing I wanted to talk about actually did not happen in committee, but many of you are aware about the governor's push to have this new program called Tax Free New York. And last Friday, I went up to hear a presentation at Cornell along with Michael Stamm, and Dooley was there, Peter. Very quick explanation of what this is. I'm sure you've read the news reports, whatever, but I just wanted to, if it's okay, quickly get through what we know about the proposal. And at this point, it is only a proposal. It will probably be decided today or tomorrow and acted on by the legislature. There has been some a number of people have raised concerns about it, but who knows where it will be. The basic deal would be that Each SUNY campus could designate up to 200 square feet of vacant space on their campus or within 1 mile of the campus.
200,000?
200,000 square feet. And did I get that wrong?
You said 200.
Thank you. It's late, folks. There will be 20 state-owned assets, vacant land, closed facilities that could also be eligible. Businesses to qualify would have to be either new to the state or be a expansion of an existing business that created net new jobs during the first year of eligibility. If a business is seeking to expand but cannot meet the new business test, the commissioner could grant permission to apply if it demonstrates that it would create net new jobs. And it certain types of businesses are prohibited from participating, the retail or wholesale, restaurants, medical, dental, real estate, and several others. And the benefits that they're promising would be basically 10 years worth sales tax paid for purchases of tangible personal property or services to be refunded up to a maximum of 120 months. And I think that goes for the 10 years, but I'm not sure. I haven't done the calculation here. Income taxes of non-officers are completely exempt for 5 years. And for years 6 to 10, salaries and wages of up to $200,000 would be exempt. Basically, if you worked in one of these, you wouldn't have to pay income tax. New York State income tax. Thank you. And then they have this formula for essentially dealing with corporate income taxes. And I've read this about 5 times, and Joe, maybe you have a better understanding, but a refundable credit is provided based on the tax-free allocation factor, which is determined by calculating the average value of personal property compared to an average value of personal property the state and wages and salaries paid to non-officers in the zone compared to wages and salaries paid in the entire state. Now, I don't understand that, but it's being touted as basically no taxes for 10 years. That's the talking point. And
property taxes?
No property taxes, because it's going to either be on land that's already tax exempt, because it's on the college, or if it's within that 1 mile from the college, there would be a pilot agreement. That's all I'm going to say tonight. If anybody else who's been following this knows more or differently, please add to this. I've invited Heather Filiberto to come to our next meeting of the Economic Development Committee to explain what is known after the dust settles. I would say that I am quite concerned that there will be unintended consequences to this whole venture. Starting with the fact that we don't really know how it would affect existing economic development efforts, such as the Emerson Project. You know, if you can develop something, you get tax-free at Ithaca College, and, you know, how's that going to affect something like Emerson down the road? That being said, you know, it's kind of operating, you know, up there, and we will have to deal with it one way or the other. So that's what I know.
We've got Nate, Pam, and Jim.
Yeah,
Carol.
So I want to talk about this a little more because in Pennsylvania, this is actually the governor sort of modeled this program off of something called a Keystone Innovation Zone in PA, and I only know that because Guthrie serves in that area, and we're actually looking at joining Keystone Innovation Zone with Mansfield University. And it's one of the things that is being talked about. Actually, it's not us that's sitting here, but Mansfield. But the way it's structured there is different. So when I first heard about the governor proposing these tax-free New York areas, I was excited about it because it has been a very beneficial program in Pennsylvania, especially in the downtowns, in the more rural parts of PA where there is a college or university nearby. It's really helped been a good tool for downtown revitalization. But the way that they structure it in Pennsylvania is that the Keystone Innovation Zone, it gives you small startup grants, no more than $5,000. Then they also subsidize internships And then the big benefit is that they will give you, they basically allow you to get a tax credit off of your profits as a business, up to 50% a year, I believe, with a total benefit of, it could be up to 100% a year, I'm sorry. But the maximum benefit over an 8-year period is $700,000. And after that, then you're normal. So that model was, I liked it because, you know, once they were making profits, then they were getting tax credits for it, so they didn't. So in a way, it reduced their tax exposure that way to incentivize them. But at the same time, these businesses are still paying property taxes and sales taxes and all these other things. The governor's proposal seems to be more of a just no tax kind of solution. And that, of course, worries me, as it, I'm sure, worries all of you, because of the kind of race to the bottom mentality that we sometimes have with economic development, especially when they're talking about potentially not paying property taxes in commercial centers like the Commons, like College Town. Those are all areas that could be part of this tax-free New York proposal. And if those areas have pilot agreements for property taxes, it could be absolutely devastating for municipalities. So I think that we have to be very, very careful with this. And if anything, I think we should talk to the governor about moving back towards the model that he based this on, which is those Keystone Innovation Zones, which I think are a smarter approach and still benefit business.
Thank you, Nate. Pam, Jim, and Carol, and I have a question.
Well, I just wanted to point out that when I ran for the state senate, I had a conversation with the president of Alfred University at that time, and it was in the early stages of the whole hydrofracking issue, and we didn't know how that was going to play out. And he thought this was a brilliant idea to put a wastewater treatment plant on the Alfred University campus. And he thought that would be a moneymaker for the college. And that image in my mind has been there. And so when I heard this whole thing with the governor, it just sends chills up my spine about where we could be going with our colleges with this kind of proposal. So thanks, Will, for the information.
Jim?
I just wanted to mention, I heard you say, Will, Fred Bond's name, Fred, the late and great Fred Bond is, no, he's not late, but he is now the leader of the Finger Lakes Park, so he swapped his blue button-down shirt and tie for a green T-shirt, and I'm hoping he can do something for us.
So Jim, as far as I know, the official announcement has yet to be made.
Well, sorry. It's on his Facebook
page. Now,
I'm sorry, nobody's watching.
It's on his Facebook page.
Unless you're watching, keep it quiet.
Well, it's on his Facebook page. It's pretty official.
Yeah, it hasn't been all that quiet. So, yeah. Okay, I've got Jim, then Carol, then I have a question, then Brian and Frank. All right, I just did Jim. I'm sorry, Carol.
I think there was somebody else ahead of me.
No. Okay, well, on the tax-free zones, I don't know if the Economic Development Committee wants to consider taking this up, having us pass something, but I have big concerns about what this says to existing New York State businesses, businesses that have located here, that have been here for many years, that aren't picking up and going where the latest tax incentives are and aren't likely to pick up at the end of those tax incentives and move on. And so if the committee were to take that up, I would, I don't know if it's something that we would want to have come here.
Well, I'll take my turn here.
I believe that the Brett Bossard news is news because there's an official goodbye for him, I believe, and for Brett Bossard is going to Cinemopolis from CAP, and Fred Bond is going where we just heard. And at the end of tomorrow's Strategic Tourism Planning Board meeting, there is a little bit of a goodbye for the two of them. that will be at 5 p.m. at, I don't think this is a general invitation to the public, but if there are a few legislators who would like to join this going away and thank them for their service, it is at 5 p.m. at John Reese's studio, which is 102 West State Street. And if you haven't been there, it's a treat to go there as well. So I encourage people to come and wish them well.
Okay, back to the tax free zones. Is Ithaca College considered is it private private colleges,
yeah,
as well as
students? They were certainly there and were under the impression that they would be included as well as the community colleges.
Okay, got your mic. And now, the pilot, so they were saying if it's in a, you're saying if it were a downtown, if it were close to, within a mile of the university?
On land that's currently taxable, there would be a pilot agreement.
There'd be a pilot. Now, does that mean, say, our local IDA has the authority or the requirement to pass a pilot? I mean, any idea?
I don't know.
It's clear.
Okay.
So.
Because it's a state. Well, I will tell you, I think... they're going to wrap up this session, this week, almost certainly. And it certainly smells like the governor is not going to take no for an answer on this. And they're going to negotiate some different, because there are a lot of different pushes and pulls on this. For example, downstate people want, this it was initially supposed to be a plum for upstate, but there's pressure to do it downstate. I'm sure that'll end up in there. I think we're gonna get this.
Do we know where Cornell stands on this?
David Skorton was at one of the events and was on TV, supporting it. I don't think any university can afford not to publicly support it. I will tell you, I heard Savanti give an interesting twist, which I think makes a lot of sense, would be that to have this. And it would be a much more constrained program if the following were true, that students, either undergrads or grad students, who had started businesses or wanted to start business, a lot of students try to start businesses while they're in school. It would be a way to, if they were the ones who were doing, actually starting the businesses, if those were the businesses that could apply, then that would make sense. Those would be people who would otherwise graduate and leave. It would give them a reason to stay. I like that idea.
Yeah. But well, and professors too. Can I add
to that? Well, yeah.
Just along those lines, okay. Though, is that also in PA, it's not just universities, but it's also medical centers, because they recognize that a lot of nursing students, physical therapy students, plus their teachers, came up with great ideas all the time that could be turned into businesses. And Geisinger in central Pennsylvania has used this to create a whole innovation center. Using that program. Yeah.
Okay. So in general, we're gonna get what we're gonna get,
yeah.
And the best we can understand it and use it to our benefit, we should go for it. Brian, Frank, and then Mike.
Well, I'm glad that this idea went out there, and at least there's some discussion and deliberation on, unlike some other things that have come out of Albany, that not too. Or in the recent past, but no, seriously. I mean, if you're going to have change on the types of scales, whether it's stuff pulling on heartstrings or wholesale economic change like this, you really should take the time to talk about it. But sometimes we do and sometimes we don't, I guess. But I have another question, but I need you to answer me something. Can you read that list again of the types of businesses that it doesn't include?
I can. So retail or wholesale, restaurants or law firms, medical dental, real estate management companies, financial services or hospitality businesses, business support services, unless approved by the commissioner, accounting, utilities, and electric generating.
So it's pretty much, it seems like manufacturing, they don't want service businesses, local service businesses. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
They're really looking for,
yeah.
innovation, manufacturing, or making stuff.
But of course, this could all have changed while we were here tonight.
Right. Just like, yeah. That's right.
You know.
I mean, but they don't want like a smelting plant on campus.
I'm guessing Cornell would not want a smelting plant on campus.
I'm just so it's not. This is not geared towards the masses of students. It's not for the benefit of masses of students. It's just going to be. Startups, offshoots, that sort of thing. So it just so happens that it's around, having said that, why do you have to limit it to just around universities is, I guess, my question.
I think the rationale, Brian, was that it was already tax-exempt. At least, you know, it was already off the tax rolls that you weren't taking.
Okay, but in the example that Nate just gave, it's within a mile of the campus.
Right.
You can take something that's currently on the tax rolls, and now it's not.
Correct. But in those cases, you have to do a pilot.
Yeah. Yeah. And those existing businesses, that's a weird thing. Yeah.
So Peter, as Peter wants to do, asked a question at this meeting on Friday. Said, I can sort of understand the rationale for linking this to research institutions and outgrowth. Mm-hmm. He could not understand why this was also being applied to community colleges, which do admirable work, but by and large are not doing research. There really wasn't any other answer other than this was the plan. So,
because one.
Mm-hmm. All right, Frank, Mike, Carol.
Thanks, Martha. Will, I think when it started, it was principally for the SUNY campuses.
Right.
And then there was an outcry, and they had to expand it to other campuses. But I didn't hear you. I was interested in the list that you just read for the second time. Was there any discussion about what the impact is, A, on IDA? I mean, Martha mentioned the IDA with regard in another capacity, and also with Research Park at the airport. That's certainly Cornell's got a stake in that.
Right.
What kind of impact would that have, or not?
So I can't really answer that, but my impression, and Dooley, maybe you can help me if you heard differently, was that Research Park would be included
in the exemption.
You know,
what about did they talk anything about enhancing the IDA?
I've heard no discussion of IDAs or the linkage, other than this is just another in this wonderful series of tools that include a variety, you know, the economic development regions and the hot spots and whatever.
Well, with the proliferation over the last 30 years of 501c3s as entities that do not pay a business income tax, and the lack of replacement, when a lot of corporations recognized that they could apply and become a 501c3 and save the what they were paying as corporate income tax. Is the state talking about replacing the lost income from the taxes? Was there any discussion?
No.
I heard several people mention.
Frank.
I mean, who's? I
see,
know.
I think that would be the state's definition of what was wrong with the Empire Zones. I think that's the only difference here, is because the Empire Zones, we did get made whole. Anyway.
Well,
no.
Some of us had Empire Zones that worked. That did what they were supposed to do.
Right.
This is
all right.
But there's more to come, right?
Mike and Carol, I'm going to remind folks it is late and we have more to do. And we're all.
Wanted to say, first of all, this hasn't been passed. We don't know what iteration it's going to be when it does get passed. We're speculating a lot here. Will, I appreciate your report and telling us what you heard, but we really don't know what's going on. I haven't been a real fan of some of the things that Governor Cuomo has proposed, but, you know, when we've got the governor of Texas coming up to New York mining our companies, trying to get them to go down to Texas, I'm glad that New York State is trying something.
Carol.
I was just going to suggest, and this would be a committee work to start, in the past we've talked about trying to achieve, at the very least, trying to achieve some of our additional objectives with our pilot agreements, and looking again at the bylaws of the IGA for such factors. And I guess I'd like to suggest that this might be a good timing to take that on, to look at such factors as, do we require those to whom we are granting pilots to pay a livable wage? Do we require those who are going to use pilots to build facilities to use LEED certified practices, building practices, or a certain level of efficiency, weather efficiency? I mean, there's a bunch of things that we've mentioned in the past. Those are two examples, and this might be good timing for us to take that on.
Thank you. We'll take that into consideration. And just to bring my report to a wrap, our next meeting will be on, will not be its normal date, which would have been July 4th. But for some reason, wiser, good, intelligent heads in our office took note of that date, and we have moved this to July 11th. 1 week later. That concludes my report.
July
11th.
All right. Thank you very much, Will. Capital Plan Review Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
The Capital Plan Review Committee met on June 12th, and we had a full agenda. We heard a report from Labella Engineers and Laurel Lamaro regarding what we had asked them to do at the last meeting, and that was to cost out and give us a project estimate for the possible expansion of the Human Services Building by adding a small bump out and reconfiguring offices there to provide room for the day reporting program, which is currently in the old library. And we did receive that. That project is about $1.5 million to do. The committee will be looking at this more carefully at our next meeting. We'll be considering a resolution, whether or not to go forward with that and whether to recommend it to the full legislature. We also had a report from Labella's regarding the public safety building study, which would, in three phases, make changes to that building, which could allow us to recover, I believe, is not recover, but add as many as, I believe, 14 beds through the whole project. It would take some of the program space that we have indoors and move it outdoors in the recreation area with a covered outdoor recreation part of the jail. Would allow us to then use that space that's indoors for a dormitory that could add, I believe, 7 beds. And we were told we can't eliminate program space, but we can move program space. And I don't think any of us wants to eliminate the program space. I think we want to expand it, if anything. But the project there seemed to have the support of our sheriff, who was at the meeting. And we will also be coming back with more information on that in the future. We talked about the relocation of the legislature to the old courthouse, which is the Governor Tompkins building. And that project is moving right along. We hope to be moving in the new furnishings within a couple of weeks. The tentative plan is to have the first meeting of the legislature be the first meeting in August. If that's the case, we only have two more meetings in this room. Now, that could get pushed back if we encounter something, but that's the idea now. We've got a tentative date to move our board, or our legislative offices, meaning the clerk and the deputy clerk and those facilities over there. We had some discussion about where we're going to put the seal. what we're going to do as far as a little ceremony. Martha's been talking with our poet laureate and others and our county historian about that. So it won't be anything elaborate, but we're looking forward to making it a happy occasion.
Thank you, Mike.
Oh, I should mention the disposition of the old library. We also talked about that. And since that interesting article was in the Ithaca Journal, which it's generated some discussions from people in the community, and we'll be talking about that, how to do more on that at our next meeting. Stay tuned. There's things happening.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions? All right. Government Operations Committee, Pat Pryor, Chair.
Yes. The Government Operations Committee held a special meeting on June 5th, specifically to discuss the proposed ethics policy, law, I should say, following the input from department heads and staff. Joe had summarized the various comments that have been made that they wanted the committee to hear, and we had department heads there from both the Board of Elections and the Planning Department to talk with us about some of their concerns. As a result of that discussion, the committee has passed several changes to the proposed elections or ethics policy. And as a result of that, even though we have decided to have, do you want me to go ahead and deal, you said, with 15 at the same time?
Or, yes. Yeah.
Okay. We have set a date for the next public hearing, but the other thing that we need to do now is delay voting on the last page in your packet tonight is the vote on the adoption of the local law amending the Code of Ethics. And what we need to do now is delay that vote until after the public hearing, and we can come back and you will have had a chance to see what those changes are that have been proposed, and we will discuss them after the public hearing, and then we will vote on whether or not to adopt the proposed language, if that's okay with you. So what I would like to do is move that we postpone the vote on the adoption of the Code of Ethics until after the public hearing.
Is there a second for that? Second by Frank.
I don't think we have any choice. You can't vote until after the public hearing, really, can you?
Well, I think the issue is that there are still some things to be discussed, but...
Jonathan has looked at the proposed changes that came from the Ethics Advisory Board and indicated that they are not substantial. So we can go ahead and hold the public hearing and then discuss them when we get ready to vote.
Julie.
I'm not sure whether all legislators have a copy of the draft Code of Ethics with the GO changes in it. Was that part of the packet? I know I'm carrying one around, but did everyone get that?
It is, yes.
It was. It has red in the original changes and blue for GO.
You have two copies in your packet. One of them has changes in red, which are the changes that had been made previously. And then it has some other changes in blue. Those were the ones that were approved by the Government Operations Committee following the input from department heads and staff.
I don't have both of those.
Okay, hold on. Does everybody have a...
No.
Everybody have two sets?
No, I don't.
They were in the... They went out with the packet and I'll do... But they are stapled separately. They weren't stapled with everything else.
Sounds like Tim is missing.
They were clipped together.
That's why I'm missing it. If it wasn't stapled, I don't know.
Each is stapled
because
itself,
stapled
but not.
Pages.
Yeah. Okay. Dooley and then Frank.
What I wanted to do tonight, which is in accord with what Jonathan said, that the Ethics Advisory Board had its regular meeting to review financial disclosure forms. There was time during that meeting to share with the Ethics Advisory Board the changes that GO had made. And the Ethics Advisory Board found them well-founded, but had two places that it recommended slight additions to the wording. Those are the changes that Pat just said Jonathan found not to be substantial. But I wanted to tell everybody tonight what they were so that when the draft local law is put out for the public hearing, it would also include those non-substantial bits of wording so that the public will have the complete package ahead of time.
Okay.
So that's what I hope to do tonight. Can I do that now? Or I don't know what to do if people don't.
That sounds fine to me. But is that okay, Pat? Is that what you're thinking?
Well, I think the motion is to delay the vote. So
right.
I leave it up to you. However you
well,
want to
let's just
fine.
Get everything out there. And
sure.
You don't want to have another committee meeting, right?
Right.
Okay. So let's just get everything out there. And, Julie, which packet do you want us to be looking
well,
at?
Well, the one with red and blue type in it, to the extent that anyone can find that.
Both of mine have red and blue. Without the red. Oh, I see. Okay.
No, it doesn't have it.
With. Got it.
Mine has green.
Oh, Lord. Okay. Well, in Section 3, Standards of Conduct, which is on page 3, if you look at that, General Prohibition, letter A. Under letter A, there are numbers 1, 2, 3, and turning the page, there's a number 4. And the GO committee suggests adding a new number 5, which reads, no county officer or employee shall misuse his or her office to obtain a benefit for the employee or other persons or private entities.
I think you mean the Ethics Advisory Board.
Ethics Advisory.
Not the GO.
I'm sorry. It's late. Yes, I definitely mean the Ethics Advisory Board. So there's a new number 5, which clarifies.
Can you read it again?
Yes, this is what Kathy gave me. No county officer or employee shall misuse his or her office to obtain a benefit for the employee or other persons or private entities. So that's the wording. The
that
other
would
one
be an addition.
Yes.
Okay.
The new number 5. The other one is under appearances, and that is on page 6. It's just before Section 4 disclosure. It's little letter I, appearances. The Government Operations Committee changed the sentence to read, except on his or her own behalf, in his or her capacity as an employee of the county. And then the addition is, in furtherance of his or her official duties. So it doesn't change anything that GO did. It clarifies what is meant.
Okay. Everybody got those things?
Could you say that one more time, that little addition to that one?
Sure. In furtherance of his or her official duties.
Okay.
All right. I've got Frank and then I got Brian. And Carol.
I have a couple of questions or concerns. Pat, if you're going to go over they're the ones I spoke with you about on the phone. Do you want me to just begin or do you want to do it?
Well, I don't want to cut anybody off or anything, Frank, but according to what was explained to me when we talked about procedure, we would wait and have that discussion prior to voting on this after the public hearing. The idea was not to discuss this evening, as I understand. Am I correct, Jonathan, on that?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
I mean, well, it's fine with me. It's really up to Martha.
All right. So, is it what I heard today during the afternoon in discussing this was that it wasn't clear exactly what your changes were? So,
I want a clarification on a couple of places in here.
I actually think that would be a good idea to do this if it's acceptable.
Yeah, let's do this, and let's, as long as we don't do this again, the same content again later on. So go ahead, Frank.
All right, the first one is under Section 3, Standards of Conduct, small a, number 3. And let me read this. A county officer, it's a second sentence. Well, let me read the whole thing. A county officer or employee shall not use or permit to use the county, the use of county resources for personal or private purposes. No problem. A county officer or employee shall not use county letterhead, personnel, equipment, supplies, or resources for a non-governmental purpose, nor engage in personal or private activities during times when he or she is required to work for the county. Are we, as legislators, aren't we considered employees? And my question, I believe we are. My question is, some of us have to work for a living beyond the legislature. If I'm not permitted to attend to whatever my duties are as an individual working, but I am required not to engage in personal or private activities during times when I'm required to work for the county. In other words, I'm hamstrung, and I cannot, if I can't attend the committee meeting, I'm going to get reprimanded for that?
John, Frank, I'm going to take a stab. I think that, I mean, we don't punch a clock. We don't work 8 to 5.
I want clarification. I understand, Martha, but
and
this is...
I'm trying to clarify so that, yes, we are county employees, but in a sense we get a stipend for our service. We don't have to punch a clock. We don't have specific hours when we have to carry out our duties, so we are not in the same legislators aren't in the same category as our employees.
Doesn't say that, Martha. We need more clarity. It needs to be clarified, is what I'm asking.
Jonathan?
All earmarks of a discussion.
I'm not sure what Frank is asking. I mean, he's making a comment. I think you can make a similar comment about a lot of things in here.
I'm asking for clarification, John.
Can I?
There's also a further one where it seems to be contradictory on page 5, number under gifts and gratuities.
Well, let's do one at a time, and I'll go to Pat.
Let me use myself as an example, Jonathan, back on page 3. I have a GO committee scheduled. I have a conflict with something in my personal life, and I make the choice to take care of whatever my personal business is rather than going to my GO committee, which I am required to be at. Would I be subject to censure by under this ethics policy by making that choice to take care of my personal business rather than meeting my county responsibility?
No.
Elected officials are different.
Right. But I think the point Frank is making is that could be inferred from this language, and then it's not clear. And if elected officials are different, we probably need to say so.
Well, I mean, what it's trying to get at is for when employees are working that they're not supposed to be using their work for personal reasons.
Right.
That's what it's trying to get at. how well it says that is, you know, people's judgment. I guess one could construe it as being kind of broad.
Well, I look at page 2, the bottom. It says, county officer or employee means a paid or unpaid officer or employee of Tompkins County, including but not limited to the members of any county board. And then, so I go to the section Frank is talking about, and that says a county officer or employee. So, I mean, I think that sounds like the EMC. Honestly, I don't think anybody's going to enforce this in any way. I don't think it's I think it's understood. Your concern that the language is what the language
is. It is a little convoluted.
I mean, it certainly covers board members as well as all employees.
Yeah.
And it is broad.
All right. Jim had his hand up before, and then Carol.
Are we county officers, Jonathan?
Yes.
But an elected official, from the moment you take office, you don't have to ever show up.
That's right. The question is, could you be censured by the ethics?
Who would censure me?
Under the ethics policy.
But who would be
the assume the legislature.
You're right.
If you didn't.
It's your constituents who elect you.
Well, of course.
I'm kind of playing devil's advocate here because I agree with Frank that this language is and with Jonathan that this language is very broad and it does not make any exception for elected officials.
Let me
hold on just a second. I think the argument is not about using county resources for personal private purposes. I think we agree on that. The issue is not that we shouldn't use letterhead, personnel, equipment, etc. The issue is when somebody is required to engaging in personal or private activities, you know, going to a doctor's appointment when you're required to work for the county. What does required to work for the county mean? You know, for a county board member, for a legislator or a member of the EMC or something else, I mean, required to work for the county. I don't think that pertains to us. There is no time when we are required to sit here. Now, I say that, and you're all going to get up and leave, I know. I think that's the issue, and I'm going to go to Carol.
Yeah, this is on this topic, and I will hold in abeyance what I had my hand up for before, but keep me on the list. If a legislator or a board member misses a meeting, we are marked publicly as excused or absent. So I'm just wondering if that fact changes, so whether we then not at a required duty when, if once we've become absent or excused, we're not required to be there anymore.
I guess I don't know why it would be any different for a legislator than anybody else. If I don't show up to work or anybody doesn't show up to work, why is it any different for a legislator? It seems to.
Duly.
Because we are not required to. We may be expected to, or the people who elect us may expect us to, but we are not required to show up. Jim unfortunately said it too clearly. We're free to do whatever we want.
Mike?
Well, we're not free to do whatever we want. Ultimately, the governor can remove us from office for malfeasance. And the voters cannot not elect us. But I agree with Dooley. You know, we don't have a set, and I agree with Martha. We don't have a set schedule. We are responsible to perform our duties as we have promised to do when we ask to be elected, and for us to think that we have to. Be disciplined by somebody. It's just not happening. There's no one here at the legislature that can discipline us. We can jawbone each other if we aren't doing something right. But ultimately, we are our own people.
Hey, I think it's somewhere in the rules that the chair gets to charge you $50 if you're absent or something. But never mind. I'm gonna try to be a little directive here and say, if you have a suggestion to change the language, Frank. Then could you make that suggestion?
I'll wait till the public hearing.
Okay.
But I do want to address something, Jim. Who can discipline us?
Yeah.
My take on this whole thing is it puts an awful lot of authority in the ethics review committee or board. They can discipline or issue an opinion on us as legislators. And Jim, it would be remiss if one of us didn't say that it's not unusual for a comment to be made about people missing meetings.
County attorney is also the attorney for the Ethics Review Board.
Yes.
And he's sitting here saying, well, it is kind of broad, but you guys don't have to be at any, you know, we have a different kind of attendance. This is not an issue.
No, I don't disagree with that. I mean, required is a term which is troublesome, I think, if you think about it in terms of all positions, you know. But, yeah, one could certainly say that you're not required to be at any particular thing at any particular time as an elected official.
It is so late already, guys. Julie and then Pat.
I just wanted to mention to Frank that the Ethics Advisory Board can't discipline legislators. The Ethics Advisory Board can only act on written complaints over which it has jurisdiction, and that is to apply the Code of Ethics. And the Ethics Advisory Board would look at this and say, it's an elected official.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Martha. I got to interrupt. Do you remember Don Lifton being censured by the Ethics Advisory Board?
I wasn't on it then.
Do you remember Tim Joseph being disciplined by the Ethics Advisory Board?
Yes, I do.
So don't please, Dooley. The Ethics Advisory Board has more authority than you're alluding to. I apologize for interrupting.
I don't know about Don, but I think the thing with Tim was about using county letterhead.
It certainly was not. It was divulging information that came out of an executive session.
All right. If there's no suggestion to change the language.
Okay. Not at this time.
Good.
But
okay.
We're bringing this up for discussion.
Did you have another place?
Yes. On page 5, under gifts and gratuities, letter E, number 2 and number 3 seem to be contradictory.
A county officer or employee shall not request or accept anything from any person or entity other than the county for doing his or her county job. That's number 2. Number 3, a county officer or employee shall not accept or receive any gifts having a value of $50 or more.
So can we get $50 or can't we accept anything? What do you think, Martha? Just questions.
Or one is specific to doing your job.
Under circumstances in which it could be reasonably be expected to influence the performance of official duties or was intended as a reward for any official action. Is there a distinction here?
Yes.
Well, I don't know. $49 isn't going to buy it a lot. In terms of favors, right? Mm-hmm. Frank, you charge more than that.
It'll buy your Ithaca Festival button.
And well, there.
All right, is there a proposal to change this language? Pat?
I would like a little time to think about it, but I would point out that we have another GO committee meeting coming up. I have the date written down here. I'll find it in a minute. And I would be happy to include time on the agenda if anyone wants to bring forward any proposed changes so that we would have some time to discuss them at committee before this comes back to the legislature again. So, Frank, if you want to suggest something.
So okay. I'm going to encourage people to be solutions-oriented.
Okay, that's fair.
Brian, Carol, Mike.
Just a quick question. I did not get the what the recommendations from the Ethics Board, for
some of their clarifying stuff. I'm wondering what color that's going to be in here. But on a serious note, are we going to get a, for lack of a better term, a clean copy of this prior to the next meeting?
That would be good. Okay.
Okay.
All right, Carol?
I have a question about, let's see, it's on page 5 of the red and blue sheet. It is section 3. I don't know what number it is, but it's the nepotism, the de-nepotism clause on page 5. And in blue, which I assume is an addition, has to do with somehow exempting the appointment of election commissioners and their staff from what was written above. And I just want to know if there was what the reason was for deciding to make that distinction.
The reason for that is, by law, election commissioners are appointed by their respective political parties, and then their staff are appointed by the election commissioners. So technically, they come under a different law than the rest of us that are county employees. They don't. We can encourage them to follow this ethics policy, but we can't require it because we don't appoint them.
Well, I understand that we must make that distinction for the election commissioners, but I'm not sure I understand how that applies to them then turning around and hiring members of their own families.
The time that that...
And whether that's a good idea.
Typically when that might happen, if it happens, is at election time when they need a great many more people than they do at other times to make sure they have coverage in each one of the polling places. And even though they advertise and they do all the things you would ordinarily do to get enough people to staff the polling places, sometimes they come up short. So they basically recruit their cousin or uncle or someone because they're short at election time. So it's usually only for the purposes of the election that this is done.
So, yeah, okay, so that I would understand, that to exempt the appointing of these temporary workers, but how would this apply to the appointment of a deputy commissioner or somebody who would be a more regular employee in the office?
Well, is this an issue that we're not the appointing officers, we're not the supervisors?
Right. Well, we should have a look at the state law again.
Yeah.
It's a jurisdictional issue because we don't appoint those people.
We don't appoint the deputy commissioners in addition to the commissioners?
That's my understanding.
Or the technical staff that they hire?
Right. We don't appoint any of them.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Mike and then Brian, Mike and then Will.
Will you supply that section?
Will?
Just a clarification of my reading, Pat. Does this, I'm looking at page 3 under the standards of conduct, general prohibition of use of office for employment or private gain. By my reading of this, it would seem that it would be impossible for somebody's relative or relative of a member of the legislature to work for the county. Is that a correct reading?
I don't think so. Jonathan, can you speak to that?
Well, it shouldn't be.
Okay, so I'm saying that, a person or entity with which the county or employee has a financial relationship. Relative or including member of his or her household, and at the top, you know, you can't do anything that would have a financial benefit. If we pass the budget of a department, we are essentially, that includes somebody who works in that department, we are benefiting them, albeit indirectly. How do we deal with that?
Well, we've had that on several occasions,
including we've had a board member at one point whose wife worked here, actually one running whose spouse works here.
And if you don't directly supervise or have any say or control over that person, and I believe when there are actions which could directly affect, I'm sorry, actions which could directly affect that person, then you need to recuse yourself.
Okay, so you recuse yourself on specific votes, but say when you come to the whole budget, you would still vote.
Right.
The whole budget. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
That's a good question.
Anything else? All right. I've actually forgotten what the action is here. Will we just
what we're requesting is that we I have moved and it was seconded that we postpone.
Just one person, okay? That would be Pat.
I moved and we seconded that we would postpone the vote on the ethics policy.
Okay. So that's that. Are we ready to vote on that? All right. Thank you, Pat. All in favor?
Clarification. Wait, are we setting a public hearing, another public hearing, or not?
We already did that.
No, we didn't.
Oh, didn't we?
No.
All right, so I'm confused.
Oh, we put it on the agenda.
Because the last page of the agenda, packet page 21.
I apologize. You're right. I moved at the beginning of the meeting to have this added to the agenda, and we do need to pass that to set the public hearing.
So what's moving now? We're voting now.
What's the motion on the floor?
Authorizing a second public hearing. Okay. We did have a hearing. That's why I'm confused. Should be on your desk or in your folder. Resolution D.
But Martha, we didn't vote yet on the motion that's on the floor.
I need more food. Okay. The motion to postpone the vote.
Until after the second hearing.
After the second hearing. All in favor of postponing the vote, please raise your hand.
Aye.
That looks unanimous. Any opposed? All right. Now, we did add to the agenda. Am I right?
Yes. Yes.
Authorizing the second public hearing. Pat, you want to go ahead?
I move Resolution D, authorizing a second public hearing on proposed local law number A of 2013, amending Chapter 32, Code of Ethics.
Second by Mike. Any discussion? Carol?
Yes, so now I'm very confused because I thought that we just sent some stuff back to the committee to consider further.
And
so should we be setting the hearing yet, or should we be waiting to set the hearing?
Well, when I discussed this with Jonathan prior to this meeting, his suggestion was that we go ahead and set the second public hearing. Some of the changes that we know that we'll be bringing forward came from the Ethics Advisory Board, and he's already determined that those are not substantial. If we have any further items that come forward that are substantial, then we would have to hold another public hearing. But we don't know that that's going to be the case.
So could this be handled in another fashion? So could we set the public hearing to be after your next meeting rather than before your next? It already is? When is your next meeting?
The next meeting is on the 25th of June.
And this is July 2nd.
July 2nd. So we will be having.
But if you made changes, would it need to come back to the legislature before we set a hearing?
It depends on the nature of the changes.
Well, the answer is no, but you couldn't vote on it then because it wouldn't be on your desk sufficient amount of time.
Oh, that's right.
I mean, you can have the public hearing, but you couldn't vote on it then if there were significant changes.
I mean, if
as a result of the GO meeting,
if the legislature would prefer, we could wait to set a date for a second public hearing until after we have the next GO meeting and report out to the legislature so that you have a chance to vote on any proposed changes.
Or we could just change the date to the 16th of July.
Yes, we could do that.
That was what I was
That's where I was going.
Okay, so it's been moved and seconded. This is on the table. Anybody want to amend it?
So I'd like to amend it to read the 16th of July instead of the 2nd of July.
I'll second that.
Okay. Any more discussion? Julie?
As long as we're amending the resolution, I would ask that in the next to the last whereas, we indicate the date which, whereas departmental responses were reviewed and addressed as appropriate by the Government Operations Committee at a special meeting on June 5th, 2013.
Is that friendly?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You got that, Kathy? Okay. All right, let's vote on the amendment then to change the date to July 16th. All in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed. Three opposed. Yes, there are two people missing. That passes 13-2. No, it passes
10-3.
All right. With that amendment, is there anything else on the main motion? All in favor of the motion, please raise your hand.
What's the main motion?
Setting the hearing for the for Local Law A, the revised Code of Ethics, for July 16th at 5:30.
Can we discuss it?
Sure.
I'm not going to support this. I can tell by the discussion tonight that we still need to do some work, and I don't understand why we need to set the public hearing when we haven't really figured out what the code is going to say. And for me, I just need to make a point of stating that, and the way I'm going to do that is to vote against this.
Any other discussion? I think it's time to focus, and I think if we've got the public hearing, then we will get everything we need by next legislature meeting, and if we don't, we won't. So I think it's time to do that. That's my personal opinion. All in favor of the revised Resolution D, please raise your hand. Opposed. Passes 11-2. All right. So, and your GO committee meeting is when?
June 25th at 10 o'clock.
All right. And this will be a hot item of discussion. Anything else for the committee? All right.
Please make sure if you want any changes considered that you get them to me before that June 25th meeting.
Right. I think it'll be really important to actually have, if there's a problem, and we've illuminated a number of issues here, so if there's something that you feel is inadequate or unclear, bring language to change this draft to Pat and to the Government Operations Committee, so we don't have to have a similar conversation next time. Broadband Committee, Pat, you're still up.
Okay. Actually, Joe stole my thunder on this because he talked about our invitation that we received to participate in the New York State Broadband Summit, which will be held this Thursday, June 20th. So I'm just going to give you just a little bit more information on it. It's at the Albany College of Nanoscale Science and Engineering. I was very pleased when I talked to Paula to have her agree to go and represent the county at this important event. I think it speaks well for the work that we've done here in Tompkins County to expand rural broadband. The thing that I hadn't realized until several conversations that I've had recently is that what we have done here is beginning to be looked at as a possible model for other parts of the state in the way that we have combined both public and private interest to try to make that expansion. So I was pretty pleased when we got this invitation, and I'm sure that Paula will do a great job representing us.
Thanks very much, Pat. That's very exciting. It really is.
Oh, our next meeting is Monday, June 24th at 5:30. The Borg Warner Group.
Okay. Any questions for Pat? Thank you very much. Budget Capital and Personnel Committee, Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you. I want to move adoption of local law number B of 2013, a local law overriding tax levy limit for 2014.
Second by Brian.
Comment?
Jim.
We sent to the county administrator a budget at 4.0, and our most recent look at our cap is somewhere in the 2.5 range. So, you know, I ask you to do the math and figure out what we should do.
So is that, so that's over the rate of inflation?
Yeah, the base rate, the base increase in the cap will be less than 2% because inflation is less than 2%. But then we're making assumptions about new lumber and the tax base and other things to get it up to 2.5%.
Okay.
As they like to say in the financial world, that's a soft number.
It is a soft number.
So that's, and that's not our decision on a number. That's our estimate of what we think the state will decide is our number.
Right.
Okay. Any discussion? Frank?
Martha, Jim, or Joe, for the benefit of anybody that's still watching us, can you explain what the what the impact... Hello. Somebody is watching us.
They're so much smarter than me.
They phoned in. Can you explain out loud what the effect... this will not take effect unless we go over, we approve a budget that takes us over what it is that we've given Joe the challenge to do. But can you explain it in English so that...
you can explain it in
French. I think you've just explained it in English. I mean, if we're allowed to go over the cap with this resolution, if the legislature votes to go over the cap... and our cap is 2.5, and our budget is 4, and that gets approved, a 4% increase, then we have followed the law. We have the permission to go over the cap. And the cap being 2.5 and us being 4, then we've covered ourselves by passing this law now.
Okay. Just
it also allows that if we didn't pass this and these other factors that Joe was talking about came in differently than we expected, then we would, if we didn't pass this, then we would be subject to having to set aside next year, having to set aside the difference and not, that gets subtracted from our cap next year.
Next year. Is there a timing issue here? That this be done.
Sure, there
now.
Is. The cap itself really doesn't come into focus until late August, early September, which is about the time that we present our budget to you. So you want to make sure that the budget that I present to you is legal, too, and this cap allows you that. Basically, I mean, what you're doing is keeping all of your options open. It's not agreeing to anything except you want to take a look at a budget and keep all of your options open. That's basically what this does.
Thank you.
Jim.
And the other thing that point that has been brought up over the years since the cap, and David used to say this, that there's a time pressure at the end of the budget process. Do you have X number of days to file with the Secretary of State? And so you really wanted to be within the window to do that. So, and we've actually helped ourselves by having an early passage of this so that we did not make it part of that overall budget discussion that, you know, could forestall a passage of a budget and put us in a dangerous window in terms of being able to file with the Secretary of State.
Kathy Lucen and Pat.
Well, I'm glad Jim just said what he did, because in the past I've been concerned about this because I thought it was a way of building in a higher number than some of us might want to do. But the way Jim put it, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but to me it's kind of Well, doing what has also been said about allowing us to have some leeway in case the numbers should change, but more importantly, it takes some of the politics out of the need to go ahead and do this because there is a tax cap, and it does separate it from the budget. In the past, I really thought this was a cop-out, but I've come to understand, and seeing how the budget process is going this year, that there's really nobody here that is eager to get a higher number. If anything, we're all trying to do our best to see that we have something reasonable. So I get it, and for this year, certainly, I think it's okay to do this now instead of waiting till later.
Pat? For all the reasons that have just been stated by Jim and Joe and others, I will support this, but I would like to go on record as being very clear that this does not indicate support for the 4% figure that we arrived at earlier. I am not prepared to support that in the budget.
Okay. Anyone else? Ready to vote? Resolution C, all in favor on the local law overriding the tax cap levy limit. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? I'm sorry, Dave, were you opposed?
No.
You're in favor. That's unanimous. Okay. All right, thank you very much. Anything else?
Yes, Monday at 4 o'clock, the 24th is our next meeting.
Thank you. Are we required to attend that meeting? Just asking.
No more than Joe is required to bring in a budget.
Just let me know if you're not coming so I don't have to be there.
Just wondering about the whole attendance policy, that's all.
Public Safety Committee, Brian Robinson, Chair.
Thanks, Martha. Our regular meeting last a week ago, yesterday, whatever date that was canceled. However, we did have a brief meeting today to make a couple of appointments, which were covered under consent. And our next meeting is Monday, July 8th.
Trust there are no questions? Mike, there are. Mike.
Brian, could you tell us the status of the job search for the Emergency Response Center director?
It's my understanding that the applications are in. They've been shut off. They've been vetted, for lack of a better term. There were several that were deemed worthy of interview. They were sent an essay question from the selection committee. I believe those are back, and do we have the formal invitations out for the interviews?
If I don't know if the formal invitations are out or not, but you're right. You're exactly right where we are in the process right now. The only thing I would add is it is a collaborative search committee, so we do have reps from IPD, IFD,
yep.
State Police, and Cayuga Heights has a representative as well as the sheriff and Lee.
And Peter.
And Peter Stein. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
And you're on the phone. Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thanks very much, Brian. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Who's taking...
It did not me.
Okay. Although I know the policy is working its way through, as Joe said before. Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The committee had a series of discussions brought to us, and just want to highlight a couple of them. First, Angela Sullivan from the Alcohol and Drug Council came. I'll leave some of the summary reports from 2012 out on the mailboxes, but she described what their group is doing with regard to the ages and primary drug admission that they're reviewing and how active they've been in the community. They really broke this down with regard to who they serve and what percentages. You might find this report very interesting because it really does help identify how well they are addressing community needs. The medical marijuana issue came up again, and we'll probably be hearing more of that. I don't want to go into too much detail because there's still bills pending on it, but she was a little reserved on giving us her take because of she needs permission apparently from her own board to do that. But I think you should take a moment and review the annual report from 2012 because it does deal with some other county departments, particularly the youth Amy Hendricks area. We had another presentation from Southern Tier AIDS, Lillian Fan. Remember we were talking about what was known as the needle exchange, syringe exchange program. Very interesting. They have distributed 1.5 million needles, syringes, since inception, and they've collected about a million. There are rules that the folks have to follow in signing up for the program. The office is across from Wegmans out on Meadow Street. If any of you'd like to stop and speak with Lillian, it's Lillian Fan. There are certain legal reasons why individuals can carry a syringe, and they're permitted to have a syringe with some liquid on the needle and in this syringe. They're not permitted to have any other drug paraphernalia on their person. She was very careful to describe that an individual could be arrested for that, but they're permitted to have, with proper identification, the syringes themselves. The Hep C, remember when we started this, the idea was harm reduction for health reasons, and the Hep C incidents have gone down. There's a lot of positive results from it. The police are aware that this is going on, and it's being very well tolerated, particularly in the city, because of the Ithaca Police Department. Brian probably could comment more about that in your former capacity than tonight, but at some point. But I think it was a very good report, and it brought us up to speed on where they are and how many people they've helped. The whole idea here was to help people. I'll leave some of Lillian's cards. Also, the type of information that they're required to give police and what they're not required to give police. I'll leave these on the mailboxes. You might like to read those. We had a report from Patricia regarding an active shooter exercise. In the event that someone came into their department, into DSS, what do they go through? And she indicated that it was absolutely amazing what they will be further trained to do and what they have been trained to do. It was a very interesting report. It might be worthwhile to have her come here at some point and walk us through that. The work from home program that some of you have heard about at other committees, Joe arranged to have Patricia come and give the health committee an update on that, and I won't get into that one because it was quite long. One of the things I wanted to bring to your attention, remember, this is with regard to FoodNet. Last year, if you remember, you folks stepped up and helped them over a hurdle because of a shortfall that they were experiencing. And we were able to help them through the budget season. This year, they got hit again, principally by the sequester. They lost a little over $9,000. It's somewhere between 9 and 11, depending upon which part of the program got hurt. They deliver about 400 meals, and there are about 100 that are done at congregate sites. And a meal costs about $8, and what they're trying to do is offset the potential shortfall for this year, which is around $75,000. They're trying to offset that by implementing four different procedures. Once again, they're looking at increasing charitable donations. They're really being aggressive about cutting their expenses. But if you remember from last year into this year, they really took a hit. They had to trim back. They have a position or two that they're probably not going to fill, or maybe only fill part-time. But Steve is doing a really good job on trying to keep costs under control. And don't want to set you guys up, but I did ask him to let Joe know, let Rick know, as we get closer to the budget, as we move through this summer, how close they come to reducing this deficit. Because the number of people taking advantage of the meals, of course, has gone up. Not a lot, but they're holding at about 400 homebound individuals. And that's a lot of people to feed. And, of course, the cost of food has gone up, and the cost of transportation has gone up. They're not immune from gasoline prices. I'll keep you posted on that one. The next committee meeting is the 9th. You're all welcome to attend. I think I'll stop there, Martha.
Thank you, Frank. That $9,000 cut from FoodNet, what kind of percentage?
You mean overall budget?
Well, out of whatever part of it that whatever that particular program is.
I'll get that for you. It's broken down. Did you get one of these?
No.
I'll get you one of those.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Frank? All right. Great. Thank you very much. Brian, is his name? Yes, Brian.
No, I was going to move the minutes.
That was my next question. All right. Seconded by Pat. Discussion? Minutes of June 4th. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Opposed? Opposed, two? You were in favor, Kathleen Lewis? Okay. All but two. All right. I'd like a motion to go to executive session to discuss a personnel matter. Moved by Pat, seconded by Frank. I do not expect us to take action after we come out of the session. All in favor of executive session? Any opposed? That's unanimous. We'll take a 5-minute break while we close down the cameras. Thank you.